Welcome to the Four Comic Junkies podcast, when the comics aren't enough and you need a little extra fix. I'm your host, JJ Hodges, and with me today, returning is Jesse James. Say hi, Jesse.
Hello.
And my brother from another mother, Corey Ferraro.
Hey, JJ, thanks for having me.
So, Corey, tell us a little bit about yourself since Jesse's been here before.
All right. Well, I am a teacher. I teach at Our Lady of Peace School. This is my second year teaching there. Prior to that, I was at Cathedral Prep for 15 years. I teach theology, religion. I'm married, have two wonderful children, Michael and Teresa, and a beautiful wife named Julie. And I am a huge comic book fan, particularly DC Comics, and I'm excited to be on the show today.
All right. Today's topic is comics and mental health. The topic we're going to discuss today is the recent Joker movie, which as of this recording just premiered. And let's dive right into it, guys. First of all, I'll tell you there are spoilers. You know, we've seen it and we all have our opinions on it. Mostly positive.
It's interesting, too, because we saw it two nights ago, and I really haven't talked to you about it. So everything we say will be for the first time.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we all just – I think we all needed to process it. It's a very
– a very heavy movie.
It is. Sure. So let's start with overall thoughts. Like, Corey, overall thoughts with the film.
I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. You know, I was definitely hesitant – about, you know, the director, Todd Phillips, going on record as saying that it wasn't going to tie in really that much to the comics. And so I was wondering what kind of license he was going to take in how it was going to be presented. But I felt that it was, even though it was kind of detached from, you know, Bruce Wayne, although, spoiler alert, he is in it briefly. Mm-hmm. And it was really kind of a standalone movie. Like, it really didn't, other than throwing out a couple names like Arkham Hospital, I mean, really Gotham City could have been New York in the movie. Mm-hmm. But despite all of that, it really kind of being removed from the comics, I really enjoyed it. I thought Joaquin Phoenix, that's right, how do you say it? Joaquin Phoenix, I thought his portrayal of the Joker was very, very solid. The guy's an amazing actor. I thought the way it was presented, you know, his kind of descent into madness, very gradual, wasn't rushed, kind of a slow burn. And there were definite parts that gave me chills and just really enjoyed it. Really, really enjoyed it. Especially like the last half hour I thought was incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Jesse, what about you? Overall thoughts?
Overall, just highly enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. Kind of echoing what Corey said. It did such a good – I think it accomplished what it set out to do, to be this kind of standalone movie where you kind of see the Joker before the Joker, right, which, as everyone knows, is something not usually addressed,
right,
which people usually like. They like the fact that, oh, you don't know who he is, where he came from. And so the director taking a crack at it it's pretty believable that he ends up where he does.
Yeah. As far as my overall thoughts, I'd have to say that from the two sides of the coin here, where you think about it in the real world sense, which is what, you know, which I'm sure we'll get into. A lot of people are nervous about the film, and understandably, from the comic book side of it, my comic book brain, I left there thinking that was the Joker. Mm-hmm. It's like I can say I enjoyed the film, but it's weird to say that, because it's so uncomfortable.
I thought the same thing.
Yeah,
I was definitely. I like this really dark part.
Yeah.
Is that bad?
Actually, there's a scene that I thought was one of the scenes I thought was hilarious was when he's practicing to go on the Murray Franklin show.
Yeah.
And I just sat there and I was like, you know, I don't think I can really relate to this character. But when I was a kid, I used to do that. I used to think I'm going to be a famous actor someday, and I'm going to be on the Tonight Show with Jay Leno, and I would come out and and be like, "Yeah, I'm so excited for this movie I'm doing," and playing pretend. I did it yesterday, but
by childhood, you mean 24 hours ago.
I mean, you know, right after the movie, I said, "Yeah, pretty much." Yeah, I used to do that. As the comic book side of it, I thought they set up a Batman universe really well. And the Joker, you know, they never really say his age, you know. So I guess that you assume 30 because he says you worked for Thomas Wayne 30 years ago to his mother. Mm-hmm. But it, you know, I think Joaquin Phoenix is like 45 or something in real life.
And if they do wind up making a, I think I might be off here.
No, you're on.
Am I on?
I don't hear myself. Okay, there we go. Now I'm hearing myself. If they do wind up, you know, if this movie makes a gazillion dollars and it does wind up being pretty widely embraced, you know, the age thing might have to be something they decide to kind of look kind of around or kind of ignore a little bit if they decide to fast forward, let's say 10, 12 years and try to tie in the new Batman movie with it, which right now they're saying they don't want to do.
Right.
But I mean, really, the ending of the movie sets up.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of reminded me of Empire in that the bad guys won.
Yeah.
And so now Gotham is like this total crappy place. And, you know, the idea is that there's no good people anymore mm-hmm. in the city. And then you have this good person who just watched his parents die in an alley. And so if they kind of go with that, how Batman is that good person and how he turns the place around, you know, I found myself really hoping after watching it that this could be the first act of like a three act movie. You know?
That's interesting.
That would be really cool.
Yeah, it would be for sure. And it's so, you know, with the new DC's new Black Label, where they're not afraid to be a little bit more, mm-hmm. You know, adult, mature, whatever you want to call it. They could echo that in the films and have an R-rated Batman, which, from what I read, it took Todd Phillips like a year to convince Warner Brothers to make this movie R.
Yeah.
Which I think it's better for it because I've read stories of people taking their kids to go see it. And I was like, I don't think I'd want my kid to see this until their 30th birthday.
Like, yeah, my son's 12 and I let him read comics, but to be honest, I've only let him read The Flash, Green Lantern, and Shazam. He's like, I want to read Batman. And I'm like, no, you need a few more years and then you'll be able to read Batman.
Well, the way Tom King writes it, it's basically a picture book. So
yeah, pretty much. Not Tom King. I'd show him the good stuff like Grant Morrison.
Oh yeah.
You know, like, yeah.
Scott
Snyder.
Oh, of course. You know, and I think that what's unsettling about the movie is that it does feel real. Mm-hmm. Is that you could believe this person would, you know, get just, you know, at a certain point just says, screw it. I'm, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. I'm taking, you know, you get what you effing deserve is what he says at, you know, mm-hmm. at one point in the movie. And it's, I feel like I practiced everything I wanted to say and now I'm blanking, but it, you know, you get the sense that, yeah, like you understand it because it feels real. And I think that what bothers me is when people are getting so into the story of, well, this is going to incite violence. This is going to do this. This is going to do that. And I feel like too many of them said that before even seeing the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
When the point of the movie, it seemed to me, was that he didn't incite violence. He did indirectly cause it. And then he sort of embraced it, but...
Well, he even said at that one point, he's like, I'm not trying to be political.
Yeah.
You know, so he was oddly kind of happy about what was happening.
Yeah.
But he wasn't trying to make a statement.
Right. And I think most people that, you know, if we want to talk about the Aurora shooting that happened, you know, when The Dark Knight Rises came out, that guy went in saying... You know, he dyed his hair orange and said, I'm the Joker and killed a bunch of people.
Mm.
And that's really tragic. But I don't think, my personal take on this is that I don't think it's on the filmmakers or the studio to be like, to say anything about that other than to say, don't do that, you know, because it's art. And Joaquin Phoenix said, you know, look, bad people are going to find their inspiration anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I some might see that as like a lazy, quote unquote, lazy answer. I 100% disagree. That's true.
Yeah. I think there is a lot of truth behind that. Mm-hmm. And speaking as a filmmaker, I would never want to feel like afraid to tackle a story if it's something I really like, even if there are mature themes to it.
Mm-hmm.
I would want to feel like I can have that artistic freedom.
Right.
Of course, not condoning people going out and shooting anyone for any reason.
Yeah.
But I think it's just become a more media heavy thing where they can latch onto it and say, well, the violent movies and the violent video games are the number one cause for all these things that are happening, when in reality, I think most people understand that there's so many other variables in, yeah. in play.
And the truth is, in the movie, he's not necessarily watching or reading books or listening to music that's turning him against society. Society, in his mind, has turned against him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his therapist at one point says, you know, they cut the funding. They don't care about you and they don't care about me. And that scene broke my heart, because all I could think was, but it also seems like she doesn't care about him. This is just a job to her.
There were so many, I thought, subtle things in the movie that kind of made you – it really set the tone. Like the fact – and this is kind of a silly thing, but I think it was done intentionally. The garbage strike.
Oh,
you know, 100%. As he's walking through the cities, there's just piles of garbage and trash everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and so to be surrounded by stench and flies and rotting stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, and there were so many ambulance sirens and cop car sirens, like in the backgrounds of different scenes.
Yeah.
And I mean, everything was done intentionally to kind of show the worst parts of society, the chaos of society, things like that.
Yeah.
Well, and also I just want to add it, if anything, when we were talking about people getting bad inspiration from the movie. Mm-hmm. The movie does such a good job of making you empathize with him because of all these bad things that happened to him.
Sure.
But they do say in the scene when he's on the talk show and Robert De Niro says, you know, not everyone is your version of these bad people.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that is what I think as a viewer – you should still understand. Yes, you can kind of root for him in this movie as an anti-hero,
mm-hmm.
but you should know in the real world that his response to a lot of things that happen were really bad.
And what happens in the movie is where this starts is those three Wall Street guys are, you know, they're making fun of him on the subway. And he takes out a gun and kills them. And he does it in self-defense, because they attack him for no other reason than they think he's weird and they want to beat him up because they think it's funny. And then, you know, it's...
Well, it flips very fast it is self-defense,
and
but
then,
he,
and then it,
he cha- one of them gets away and he...
He chases him down, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I will say that my favorite part of the movie... is after he runs away, he finds like a public bathroom and kind of locks himself in. And you see for the first time him kind of embrace that violence. And then it carries throughout the movie where he does like this kind of dance to himself.
Yeah.
Qigong moments. And
really chilling.
The way they shot it, I thought it was just a very powerful, it really made you believe that this is how the Joker was born.
Yeah, it's like a literal dance with death.
Mm-hmm.
And the music is just – and I just sat there like, whoa, like this is unsettling. And in a weird way, it's like we were talking about, it's like the comic book side of my brain was going, that's the Joker.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's – he didn't – there's no dialogue mm-hmm. for a good, you know – 3 to 5 minutes and you're just pulled in.
Yeah.
And that speaks to a lot of Joaquin Phoenix's performance, where he's not crying, he's not upset, and he's not even doing they establish early on in the movie that his laugh is painful for him. It's almost like a chronic cough or something.
That was one of my favorite elements of the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there were times when he was laughing, like when the coworkers at the place that he was at were making fun of the little person that worked there. He's mm-hmm. laughing right along with them, but then he walks around the corner and he immediately stops. So you know it wasn't him laughing at the little person. It was him dealing with this tic that he had of laughing.
Yeah. And it's tragic, because you see the film, like he is a nice guy. He just wants to, you know, he says, you know, my mother always told me my job was to bring laughter and joy to the world. And another scene I kind of, you know, related to was, when he and his mother are watching the Murray Franklin show, he imagines himself in the audience, and Murray brings him down and says, you know, I'm so proud of you. And I just, I teared up a little bit. I was like, that's so sweet. Like he just, this is all he wants. And he just keeps making the wrong choices. You know, that his coworker says, you know, here, take this. And it's a gun in a paper bag. And he's like, I can't take this. He's like, you got to defend yourself. And then he, and then just like an idiot, he brings it to a children's hospital.
Yeah. Which I liked that scene too, because here's this guy trying to do something legitimately good, help children, you know. I'm definitely in the minority on this, but I like when they get into the humanity of the Joker. You know, I appreciate the kind of force of nature approach that they had like in The Dark Knight with Heath Ledger and, and really in the comics. I mean, Joker should have been dead 10 times over with the things that have happened to him in the comics. But, you know, there are a couple of stories. Of course, The Killing Joke, which the movie did tied into that, too, because he was the failed stand-up comic.
Yep.
He wasn't married in the movie, but he had a fictitious relationship with a girl that never happened in his mind. And the abuse, too. You know, he was abused as a child by his mother's boyfriend. And I remember a few years back, I think it was when they did Forever Evil, there was a one-shot Joker story, which had flashbacks to him being abused. I think it was by his grandmother. And so I actually do like that, you know, kind of showing that human side. I know I'm the minority on that, but, you know, I thought that, and then here's a whole movie based on that, you know, kind of showing how this guy was created.
I think there's some, it's almost, I'd say when it comes to the Joker, less is more when it comes to that. You know, you don't want to know too much, you know, just enough.
Yeah.
And
I think I can appreciate it in a standalone story because it's like, oh, let's kind of see what this would look like. Mm-hmm. And I think something that's really interesting is like in Batman 89, in that version, he kills Bruce's parents, which is what causes Batman to be born. And that's like a really powerful device in that film where, the Jack Napier creates Batman, but Batman creates Joker by pushing him in the chemicals. And it's like this, who did it first? You made me, I made you.
Right.
Where this film, it actually is with the Joker acting first.
Yeah.
If you think about it. But to add a third layer, there's this whole plot point with Thomas Wayne. And one could argue that Thomas Wayne not being a part of his life contributed to his negative upbringing, which led to Joker, which then led to Batman. So
do you guys really think that Thomas Wayne was his dad?
So I was really surprised that both of you at the end were like, wow, I'm really glad that they didn't do that.
Yeah.
And then I from watching it, I really think that the director's goal was to make it ambiguous, where at first you're like, oh, Thomas is his dad, Bruce is his brother, that's crazy. And then he goes, talks to Thomas, and Thomas is like, no, she is neurotic and she made all that up. But then in the flashback, she says, you know, Thomas made up those adoption papers. That's not what happened, which I think is a pretty strong, that's like what a rich person would do to get out of something like
true.
That.
That's true.
And the Joker has a picture of his mom, and on the back it said, love your smile, TW, for Thomas Wayne.
Right.
And so I think the director really tried to not say one way or the other if it did or didn't.
But Thomas Wayne is supposed to be such an altruistic, pure guy.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And if it turns out that that's the – I mean, say they make a sequel and they come out with a definitive yes or no on whether or not Wayne is Joker's dad – I really hope he isn't. I don't know. Thomas Wayne's like one of those untouchables in comics.
Yeah, I would say it would be allowed only in this sense because it is a one-off. It's a standalone story where we can humanize the Joker, but maybe we have to bring down the heroes, you know?
Yeah. Corey and I did talk about that a little bit, you know, where you were like, I normally wouldn't like this version of Thomas Wayne, but because of this Elseworlds Black Label, I can accept it. And I thought about that a lot. And I can't remember the actor's name that played Thomas in Batman Begins. But
he's a good actor.
He was on Law and Order for a long time. I thought he was great as Thomas Wayne. Like, he just you could see where the goodness in Bruce came from.
And I have a friend who is a huge comic book fan. He may listen to this. His name is Christoph. Hey, Christoph, if you're listening. And I remember one time we were talking about Batman versus Superman, which JJ knows my feelings on that film. It's not high. But in the beginning, when they showed that flashback, he was really bothered by the fact that Thomas went for the gun when Chill was trying to kill him. Mm-hmm. And the reason was the same thing for this movie, that Thomas Wayne is like untouchable. He's good. He's pure. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I don't know. That was honestly, looking back, that was the one element of the movie that bothered me. But probably because I'm more of a Batman purist.
You mean of Joker or Batman Superman?
No, a lot bothered me in Batman Superman.
No, I just mean the
but,
Thomas part.
In the Thomas part in Joker, sorry.
Oh, okay. Clear on.
Well, yeah, I actually didn't like it either.
You didn't?
I think it worked, but it's not the Thomas I like.
Exactly.
Well, you know? let me play devil's advocate for the movie then, Corey. Somebody's pointing a gun at your son. Are you just gonna stand there?
Well, I mean, I'm not Thomas Wayne, I guess. I
don't see Michael becoming Batman.
In the mythos. Yeah, he just needs to get a little jacked. He's a stick, basically. Right now. When you look at Batman Begins, you know, mm-hmm. he just tried to talk the guy down. I believe that is still the current continuity. You know, mm-hmm. they've had a lot of retellings of that story.
I think that's pretty common,
really, though. I think Batman vs. Superman, because they were trying to paint this picture of like the more gruff, older, harsher,
angry Batman. Yeah.
I think that's why they went that way, because right before that you had the Nolan films and it was so popular. And in that version, he talks him down. So I kind of felt like when the next mythos came around, they're like, okay, we need to change it up a little.
It was also like that in the first episode of Gotham when, the guy's, you know, comes at Thomas and Martha. He says, okay, it's okay. You know, he doesn't really have much dialogue, but he's just like, take the money and go and get shot. I don't know. I like both versions. I like the idea that Thomas is just going to go, no, you're not going to hurt my family. And I also like the idea of him talking him down, because I see both sides of that in Batman, because I'm such a huge, you know, I've been rewatching the animated series, and my friends and I, you know, we were in a group chat and they talked about that. A friend of mine brought up, he's like, hey, Batman doesn't always just go for the punch, right? He wants to help these guys. I was like, 100% watching the animated series, which in many fans' minds is the definitive Batman. There's so many times when Batman says, I don't want to fight, let's talk this out, you know, and of course he doesn't do that really with Joker, but with a lot of the villains, you know, a lot of the very first episodes were stories about kids that were being kidnapped or people that were being abused. Like there's one episode where the homeless are being abducted and Bruce takes interest in that. And I like that, you can see the Thomas Wayne in that he wanted to help those people. And so Bruce's first thought is, okay, you know, if I have to fight them, I will, because I can, but I'd prefer not to. And I think, so there's definitely a lot of Thomas Wayne.
I don't know though. In a lot of other renditions, the idea is that all the villains are afraid of Batman, especially like the low level criminals, like the thugs, where he's almost like a legend. They don't know if he's real, so they're afraid. And he often will beat people up until where he doesn't kill them.
Yeah.
And I think you could say, oh, if his father was a little rough or had that in him, you can see that he would also have that in him.
Sure. I don't know. I mean, we could debate that all day.
So let's say the Joker does really, really well, and they decide that they're going to try to somehow continue it, including the story of Bruce. Would you think that this version of Batman, the one that Robert Pattinson is going to play, should he kill?
100% no. I it's funny because we talked about that where, you know, you had your thoughts on Batman Superman, and you said that bothered me right from the get-go. I don't like that. That's not okay. And I said, you know what? In this story, I kind of get it. But then as time went on, I went, No, I'm not okay with it.
My big beef with that movie, I know we're here to talk about Joker, but my big beef with that movie is, you know, if you want to take the Dark Knight Returns kind of angle, killing Batman, okay, but should that be the Batman of your extended universe? No, I don't think an older killing Batman should be the person that should be tied in with Man of Steel, Superman, and Wonder Woman, and the new Flash.
Yeah, and again, I think they went that way to move further away from the Nolan films.
Yeah,
like, we can't have...
But the Nolan Batman was so good.
It was. And they're like, we can't repeat it. We have to top it.
Yeah.
So what's the most famous Batman story? They probably looked at things like... Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's... And, you know, the look of the character was very obviously very much based on that version. But going back to Joker, because otherwise, you know, we'll get into it.
I just want to end with Thomas.
Oh, sure.
Like, in Joker, I probably would like it better if he was not Joker's father. However, I think the portrayal was, or the writing rather, of the character, I did not like that. He was on the talk show and he said, you know, people who haven't made something of themselves, we're always going to look at them as clowns. Like, it was very harsh. And when he punches Joker, like, Joker comes to him and he's basically like, well, you're my dad. And rather than explaining it to him, he like just clocks him and leaves.
Yeah.
And it was a mean Thomas. It frightened me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the one thing I didn't like was Thomas in the movie.
I can definitely agree with that. And the whole point of it was to set up sort of a class warfare. Again,
yeah.
Going back to like these
Which really surprised me. What did you guys think of that? Because I couldn't tell if they were really trying to speak on current events or if it was just this isolated thing in the story.
It's like a little bit of both, isn't it? Because I remember reading an interview with Christopher Nolan after Dark Knight came out, and people said, and they were saying to him, you know, were you kind of inspired by 9/11 with this? Like, and you know, it's like the terrorists attack the Twin Towers, and then Bush says, well, we're gonna go to war. So it's like there's an escalation to that, which was very real at the time and still is, really. And I think...
What did Nolan say to that?
He said that the simple answer was yes, that he was inspired by it, but he's also trying to frame it in a film that makes it, I don't know, a little bit easier to digest, as opposed to, you know, he's not preaching to the audience, but... It's kind of a take it for what you will, but yes, I was inspired by that. And there's truth from that in the comics, that Batman shows up and then the villains, you know, become more prominent. And I liked this version. So that's not a sound effect we added.
I was sitting here thinking, wow, that timing was kind of interesting.
But I think that there's a little bit. So I'm sure that there is a little bit of, you know, there is the current events plus them wanting to tell this type of story where, yeah, the underclass or the middle class, low class, whatever you want to call them, they feel ostracized and used and looked down on by the upper class. I definitely see that, just the way that, and not to get super duper political here, but just the way Trump talks, he doesn't talk like a person that understands, you know,
very much an us and them kind of thing.
Yeah. And Thomas Wayne is in the movie is doing that, is kind of saying, well, you know, they could make something of themselves, but they're not. And it's just such a, you don't understand the struggle of it kind of thing. Like you have a silver spoon, you don't understand.
I did think it was interesting that on the talk show, he says he's talking about the man in the clown mask killing the Wall Street kids, and says, you know, that was done by someone, a coward in a mask.
Yeah.
And then, you know, his son's going to grow up to wear a mask.
I actually turned to Corey during the movie and I was like, what if Bruce watched that? And he said, I don't know, Dad. I like masks. but yeah, you know, and I think that there's a, I don't know if you guys ever saw this, but there was a trailer before the Arkham Knight video game came out where it's a letter that Thomas Wayne wrote to his son. And
yes.
Okay. have you seen it, Corey?
I am aware of that element of the story, but yeah. I don't think I've ever seen the trailer.
Oh, it's really powerful because it's sort of weirdly, you know, what's the word I'm looking for?
Well, in it, it's a letter to his son to, you know, grow up and be strong. But if you read between the lines, he's literally written everything that Bruce does as Batman.
Yeah,
really.
But in a realistic way,
is this a movie? What is this?
It's the Arkham Knight video game.
Oh, see, I never played that one. I played City and I played Origins, but Knight.
Because
they had that letter in the comics. I remember him receiving it from Barry Allen.
Well, that was totally different.
Totally different. Okay.
But he in this letter, I remember what lines that start, you know, that stick out, and it's purposeful, is don't spend all your money on fancy cars. They show the Batmobile. Don't spend it on fancy, you know, outfits or this or that. And they show the bat suit. Mm-hmm. And it's,
I'll have to check it out on YouTube. That's cool.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, you know, spend your money to do good. And it's like, it's weirdly like he's honoring his father and not at the same time. And, you know, everybody can sit here and go, well, it's, you know, Bruce Wayne should spend his money on helping the poor.
Which he does.
He does. Mm-hmm. But he also uses it to, you know, beat up criminals. You know,
buy tech to beat up criminals, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, who wouldn't? That's sort of like the Batman Who Laughs comic book. Did you read that one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of that in there where the Batman Who Laughs is a Bruce Wayne from an alternate dimension that's been infected by the Joker and essentially becomes a Joker-Batman hybrid. So he's like Apex Predator Batman, and he's the best there is at what he does.
Yeah.
And he taunts Batman by bringing in all these different Bruce Waynes from other universes and saying, you know, this, look, you're the worst one because all these other guys used their money and helped the city, and you're using your money and you're hurting the city. And he's really just making fun of him and getting to the nitty gritty of it. And I read that and I was just like, ow.
Yeah, that was a great series.
Yeah, that hurts watching that or reading that. But again, okay. So going back to Joker, we keep getting off topic.
Well, no, we're still talking.
Well, it's all related.
It's so
easy to get into all that. You know, that's the fun thing about this is that we're all fans of it, so we all love talking about it anyway. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think with Joker, you know, it was so sweet watching him at first, and one of my favorite scenes was him in the children's hospital when he's dancing, and you know, if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. And
I like that scene too.
And it's so sweet, and you can tell the kids are really into it, and he's so happy to be there. And then he drops the gun. You know, like I said earlier, he keeps making terrible decisions, and he kind of tries to play it off. He just goes, shh, you know, and some of the kids laugh, and then he gets in trouble for it because as soon as the gun fell out, I was like, he's done. This is it. He's gonna be Joker now. And it's just so, you know, and it's heartbreaking. And then as the movie goes on, you just, like it should be with Joker, you're uncomfortable because, mm-hmm. Wow, this guy is just.
Well, from a storytelling standpoint. It's
deliberate, too.
Yeah, one of the writers I know that talks about screenwriting and things like that is to constantly find ways to create tension and then ease it and then escalate it. So it's like this, mm-hmm. this nice rhythm where you have to have good things happen to him and then bad things happen to him, mm-hmm. for not just like tragic stories, but, you know, dramas in general, sure. is to keep pushing and pulling. And so in a story where you have to depict nothing but bad things happening to this person, they still found a way to give him these little wins, and it was all in the form of these visions in his mind that weren't actually happening,
yeah.
Which is brilliant because then at the end of it, the only solace he had were you know, fantasies he built up in his mind,
right,
where he thinks he had a relationship with this girl and, mm-hmm. and he didn't. And it was a really smart way to just flip everything.
Yeah.
And leave him with nothing but despair.
And that's what, and that to me is what hurts when people talk about this movie and how they're afraid it's going to cause all this violence and everything. I just want to argue with them, like, isn't that sad that we live in a world where that's what we're afraid of, as opposed to reaching out to these people and trying to help them?
Yeah.
We're just going, well, it's this movie's just going to hurt them. It's like, well, it's easy to blame a movie. The movie can't defend itself.
I remember, I think it was back in the 80s. You guys remember the movie Falling Down with what's his name? He was married to Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Michael Douglas.
Yeah, it was kind of the same type of thing. This guy who just snapped. And you should watch it sometimes. It's really, really powerful. Like mm-hmm. he just starts lashing out at society for what he sees as the injustices. And then you feel bad for him, but you also see that he caused some of the things that he's going through. You should check it out sometime, Falling mm-hmm. Down. It was this movie had a very much a vibe like that. You know, when you were saying things in his mind.
Does he have like a lot of love interests in that movie?
He has a ex-wife, but she has a very small role to play.
Okay.
Yeah. If, again, it's probably been about 2.5 decades since I've seen it, but I think so. When you were going back to things not being real, I saw a thing online, you know, just a kind of a fan theory that the entire movie was in his mind mm-hmm. because they show a brief flashback, very brief, to him hitting his head on the glass in the asylum. You know, they mention him being in an asylum. And then at the very end, of course, he's in that room with that woman who bears a resemblance to the woman that he was going to see, the social worker.
Sure.
Which actually led to, honestly, and this is probably bad for me to admit, but my favorite part of the whole movie is when he walks out of the room with the blood on his shoes and the orderlies chase him around the hospital. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's Joker. I personally hope that that theory is not true, that the entire thing was in his mind. I don't know what you guys think of that, but I don't like that idea.
Well, it being art and being standalone as it is, we can take it.
It would be
any
such
way.
A Joker move. You know, the famous line he has where I can't remember my past, so I just make up new ones.
Yeah, he's like, if I have a past, I prefer it to be multiple choice.
Yeah. There it is, yep.
And the thing that I think
But they could do it all over for part two.
if they do a part two.
Something new.
Well, the thing that, you know, I thought about a lot is like, you know, the unsettling nature of the movie is obviously very deliberate. But the where that comes into play is that, you know, you feel like it is hopeless at the end because, the you know, as Corey said, the villain wins. But the sad thing about that, I thought about that a lot. I was like, you know, I don't think people would say that about the movie, that if it kind of ended with Bruce Wayne, kind of, you just get the sense that, okay, like, you know, like that old comic strip where he's just like, I swear to, you know, avenge my parents' death or, you know, whatever. Because, you know, you do feel like there's no hope in the movie, which is deliberate on the filmmaker's
part. Yeah, but you know he's coming when they show.
Oh yeah, they show
his
him.
Parents going down.
Yeah,
you know he's coming.
Yeah, as soon as they showed the theater, it's a Zorro, the gay blade. I was like, here it is, it's happening.
I actually, about halfway through, I was like, this is probably going to end with Joker killing Bruce's parents.
Yeah.
I really thought it was going to happen.
I thought he was going to be responsible. Yeah. I guess there was controversy with Batman 89 saying that Jack Napier was the one that killed his parents. And I don't know, when I watched it as a kid, I was like, okay. Like it never bothered me as a kid.
I've always been okay with changes in continuity for the movie's sake, as long as the characters stay true to who they are.
Yeah.
You know, like if you want to make like Ledger, for example, he carved the smile into his face versus falling in a vat of acid. That didn't bother me because Ledger was the perfect Joker.
He was,
you mm-hmm. know, so I'm and Bane, too. You know, so what if he, you know, wasn't a drug addict? You know, he just had a respirator on his face. You know what I mean? Because of the injuries in prison, mm-hmm. he was still an awesome Bane. So,
yeah,
I'm cool with continuity changes as long as the characterization stays the same.
And that's what I thought about this movie. And I think, Corey and I think you and I think a lot alike about this. I was thinking about this before we recorded. I remember years ago when Green Lantern came out, mm-hmm. we were both like, that was awesome. I don't know why people hate this. This movie's great. And because we were such huge fans of the Geoff Johns comic. And then as the years went on, both of us kind of went, Yeah, it's not that great.
Yeah. It's like when you start dating a girl and you immediately know it's not going to work out. And you're like, no, this is fine. This is great. I love this.
I have no idea what that's like. JK. I think you and I were on the same page with Joker too. When they first announced it, I was like, that sounds stupid. Mm-hmm. You can't take Joker away from Batman. That doesn't make any sense. And then I think you and I said that at one point. And then as they started to, you know, show, you know, him in the makeup and the trailers and the posters, we were like, whoa, this.
Yeah.
This
the first trailer really sold me on it.
Yeah.
It blew me out of the water. Mm-hmm. I watched it like probably 10 times straight.
Yeah. It was just like,
wow, this is going to be powerful.
And it felt like Joker, mm-hmm. you know, and I had read theories that Joaquin Phoenix wasn't going to be, quote unquote, the real Joker, that he was going to die and inspire somebody else to be the Joker, which is kind of what happened in Gotham with the Jerome and Jeremiah characters. But I'm glad that didn't happen, that he mm-hmm. survived the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. And you talking about the last scene in the movie, it's such a Joker moment. And all I could think was like, you know, what's funny about this is that it is a Joker moment. And it also feels like Scooby-Doo, where they're running in and out of.
It was perfect. It was the perfect way to end the film.
Just, you know, so like almost.
Because cartoony. Honestly, when he showed up on the talk show, mm-hmm. I thought he was still a little bit too reserved. I felt like that should have been the moment where he was completely over the top. But then I had to remind myself, well, this is Joker being Joker for the first time really ever.
Yeah.
So if they do, and again, I know I sound like a broken record, if they do a sequel, I imagine if they fast forward 10 years, he'll be more over the top, embracing the role. But that final scene was just, I mean, that's something that I would think would be right out of the comics. Yeah. You know, he comes out leaving bloody footprints of the person he just killed in the room, and he's yeah. running around from orderlies like Charlie Chaplin, who right. was referenced earlier in
yeah.
the film.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was perfect.
I think my favorite, like, Joker line in it, it just, what gave me chills as a comic book fan was when he's laughing and at the end of the movie, she says, you know, what are you laughing? And he said, I just thought of a joke. And she's like, oh, well, tell me the joke. And he's like, no, you wouldn't get it.
You wouldn't get it, yeah.
I was like, you know, right now I'm just like, oh, like he's the Joker. And yeah. And it's like, sure, like, you know, as the comic book purist in me, I don't really have that much of the purism, so to speak. I do miss the chemicals. I miss the gags, you know. But at the same time, it's like, I can appreciate the story they were telling because it is still, like you said, stayed true to the Joker character. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's what made it for me. Mm-hmm. You know, and I remember you and I talked about that when Dark Knight came out. Was just very much like, you know, they took away all the, like, the laughing gas and all the other classic Joker gags that you think of, you know, but it still felt like the Joker.
He did have the gas in the first scene, though, in the bank. Remember that? He put the gas container in his mouth. Yeah.
Well, but it didn't, like, you know.
It didn't make him start chuckling. But right. I always thought
and
that was
actually,
kinda
when he's sign twirling at the beginning and gets jumped, he's on the ground. And if you notice, the flower starts to leak.
Oh, yeah. I did see that. And I was just.
That was a nice touch.
It was a nice touch.
And it's just, and you feel for him up until a certain point, which was deliberate on the filmmaker's part, because it just, you know, the reality of the movie, it becomes so unsettling. Like, I thought of that when, you know, those guys that he used to work with come and see him, and the one guy's like, hey, you know, we got to get our story straight because the cops are talking. He's got some of the makeup on, and he's got the green hair stuff, but it's like, it's stained his back, it's on his underwear, and he just looks otherworldly. He looks like something out of, like, Insidious
or
something.
And then he kills that guy much more cold-blooded.
Yeah. And he's just, and he's not, and at that point, he's not fazed by it.
Mm-hmm. I really thought when the little person couldn't reach the latch, mm-hmm. I really thought he was going to say, well, now I have to kill you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I thought that was going to happen, which would have been kind of Joker-ish, but
that was some,
I think,
really
at that point,
well-written dark humor.
Yeah.
It was also Joker-ish to let him go.
Yeah. Yeah. This is rookie Joker. This is still just in the beginning.
You know, I don't know. There was a Harley Quinn comic that came out years ago that was tied it was her origin into the actual comic books because she started in the animated series and it took place during No Man's Land. And so it's like the Joker is hanging out with his henchmen and he's like pretending to do a talk show. He's like, hey, you know, whatever the guy's name is, Sully, come talk to me for a second. He's like, so tell me about yourself. And he's like, well, I got a wife and kids and, you know, and Joker's just looking at him and then he shoots him. And he's like, that's enough. I'm tired of this or something. And it's just, you know, it's written by Paul Dini. You know, he's written,
oh my gosh,
you know, yeah. some of the
he's
best
a legend.
Yeah. Some of the best Joker stories created Harley Quinn. And it just, and I always think of that, like the Joker, the unpredictability of the character is what makes him so exciting and so scary. And it's funny because when they released the first picture of Jared Leto as the Joker and he had all the tattoos, my first thought was, that tattoo artist is dead. He killed that guy. Like, he did the tattoo and he's like, do you like it? And he's like, yeah. And then he would kill the guy.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I was just like, that's what the Joker would do. It's like the Joker's killed for less.
And, you think Leto's going to show up in Birds of Prey, Harley Quinn Birds of Prey?
If they maintain that continuity, yes. But I don't know because I go back and forth with Jared Leto, where I think, I don't know, his methodiness with acting is, I think the stories I read about him, that's too much.
Yeah.
Like, all right, dude, you're just in a movie. You're not, you know, it's one thing when you're in Dallas Buyers Club and it's like, oh, it's an Oscar contender. It's quite another when you're just playing the Joker and, you know, you want to get into that mindset, sure. You know, like Joaquin Phoenix did, but Joaquin Phoenix isn't sending, you know,
dead animals to people
or bullets or whatever. Yeah. It's just that's too much. I don't know. I know.
What do you think of Leto's Joker? I don't know if we've ever had this conversation, Jesse.
Overall, I enjoyed it. I think I don't think he got the best material to work with in Suicide Squad. So I'd be curious to see him take a real, like the casing that Bruce has of Robin. Like, I really would love to see what happened there with his Joker.
Yeah. Which I guess
The behind the scenes stuff.
Never see it. Yeah.
And I was speaking at a acting workshop where people were talking about method acting, and an article I had read, I think nailed it, where method acting is a real thing where you kind of bring your past experiences and apply it to the character you're portraying.
Mm-hmm.
But it's become like a Hollywood fad now to just, how far can I go in this character? How much can I starve myself to get skinny to be this character? And it's become more about the media behind the portrayal than the actual process. Because even Heath Ledger, I read that he stayed in a hotel room for like 30 or 40 days.
Yeah, and he
and really just worked on the voice and the mannerisms and everything, which is all part of the actor's process. But when you do it hoping or intending for it to become a story just so you can get attention, that's when, you know...
Are you saying actors in Hollywood crave attention? Get out of here. What are you talking about?
Well,
I crave attention. But I'm not sending rats to people.
No, yet. It's a slippery slope,
JJ. I haven't been cast as the Joker yet.
Yeah, I think it's...
That's interesting. I'd never looked at it from that perspective.
Yeah, but then I also don't know if he was doing it for attention or... You know, it's very much what you believe. So maybe he really did think this was helping him, and maybe it was for him.
Yeah.
But it got out, and then it just became the thing everyone talked about.
He seems like an eccentric guy. I mean, just seeing him in interviews and stuff. And I, you know, we don't really know him, you know, obviously.
Exactly.
But I don't know, because I've read stories of like Mike Myers when he was in Austin Powers makeup, he stayed in character, you know.
Yeah.
And I think, but I think for some actors, that's just how. That is their process.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I have to be in character because, you know, if I'm in the makeup, if I'm in the costume, I read an interview with Stephen Amell, you know, who plays Green Arrow. He said that even if they're just shooting him from the waist up, if he's wearing uncomfortable shoes, you know, like dress shoes, he has to wear them because he feels more in character as Oliver Queen that way. And that I can respect, and I understand that. I'm not really like that when I have to act, because I – but then again, like, I've never been cast in a thing that had, like, millions of dollars behind it.
Yet.
Well, yeah, maybe someday.
But, I mean, I've heard stories about Robert De Niro and how you're not allowed to look him in the eye on set. And I think you have to call him by his character names. I mean, you're not allowed to talk to him, of course, but the like the one or two people who are, like the director, have to like keep their head down and like give some direction. Like,
that's a diva thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's Hollywood.
I remember our mutual friend Steve. He and I had a huge fight about Marlon Brando and how he's like, whatever reason, part of Brando's process was never memorizing lines. They would have cue cards all over the set. Like, I guess in Superman the movie,
that's a diva.
He read his lines off the baby's diaper when he's Jor-El.
Didn't he show up that scene with him in Apocalypse Now? Didn't he just make up all those lines?
Yeah.
I think I remember hearing that somewhere.
I read
he
that
showed
too.
Up super out of weight or overweight, so they had to kind of like hide him in the shadows because he was a POW, you know, like he should have been skinny. So he showed up overweight, didn't know any of his lines, and he just talked.
And Steve said, I think that's so cool that he does that, and I was like, I think that's disrespectful to the crew and the cast and the writers.
The writer especially,
And he was like, it isn't, because that's his process, that's the way he does it, and we went off on it. And we're fighting about this like dude that, you know, we have zero connection with. So I don't even like Brando really that much as an actor. But I've only seen him in like two things. Mm-hmm. You know, Superman 1 and 2. But you know, I don't know. And Joaquin Phoenix, you know, going back to Joker, he you know, when you first see him shirtless in the movie, I yelled out. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah,
like,
it was wow.
It was unsettling. Like, and you said it right away. You were like, he looks like a skeleton.
Yeah.
And
I could just tell from his face, even before he was shirtless, how gaunt he was.
Yeah.
When you look at something like Walk the Line, where he was Johnny Cash,
right?
You know, he fills out that character.
and even like now he looks much,
which is
healthier.
Also a great movie, Walk the Line. I like that movie.
I've never seen that. I did see the parody Walk Hard with John C. Reilly, which is
not as good.
Yeah,
not as good.
Not the same.
Well, no, but it's hilarious. It's a fun movie to watch. With Joker, you know, and that was part of his process. Like, this is how I get into this character. And Joker's always been portrayed as really like skinny and weird looking. And I remember, you know, people always joke like, well, how can he keep up with Batman? You know, when Batman's been trained by like every ninja in the world or whatever, it's like, there's just something otherworldly about the Joker.
Like in that one Scott Snyder comic, I think it might have been Death of the Family, where you have the inner monologue of Batman and he goes, I always forget how fast he is.
Yeah.
Do you remember that line?
Yep.
Yeah. So even the best trained martial artist in the world can get caught off guard by the chaotic nature of the Joker.
Love that. And Snyder, you know, it's funny because I read an interview with him where they talked about Joker, or they talked about the Joker when he was, when he was writing him. It's like, so Batman's faced Darkseid, the Anti-Monitor. What scares him about the Joker? You know, and Snyder was really smart about it. He was like, because the Joker, it's like, when it's this cosmic being, Batman has help with the Justice League, and you know, he can fight him
or there's the person has a clear objective.
Yeah,
whereas the Joker's always unpredictable.
Yeah, and that terrifies him. And you know, in the one comic Endgame, you know, the Joker, he develops his strand of the Joker venom where he infects the Justice League, and
great scene.
Yeah, and that terrifies Batman. It's like he sort of was prepared for it. Like at some point, my greatest enemy, you know, this sure quote unquote human person can just take over the most powerful beings on the planet. And that scene was terrifying to me reading that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and it's not real, it's a comic book, but I got so invested in the story. I was like, oh my God, that's terrifying. Seeing the like Superman with this big Joker grin was just horrifying to look at. And then, you know, bringing it back to reality with this movie, it's just, when those guys come to see him in his apartment, and he just, like I said before, he has just a little bit of the makeup on and the green hair. And he's, you know, he's standing in the doorway. His head is kind of down and he just looks weird.
Yeah, yeah. The transformation was really well done. Yeah. I think everything, like cinematography wise and writing directing wise,
yeah,
just solid all around.
And then when he, I think one of my, when you really start to see him become the Joker is when he escapes the police that are chasing him, and they're getting beat up by all the, you know, the rioters, and he just looks at them and he just starts dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's like, you know, he's getting away with it. And I was just like, that's the Joker.
Yeah. There were a couple of moments where I was really blown out of the water by those little subtle things. Like the dancing was fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, there's the scene, you know, they showed in all the trailers and stuff, but I still loved it. Like, the music choice was a little weird.
I know what you're going to mention. The stairs.
When he's dancing on
Rock
the stairs.
Rock and Roll Part 2 and like, da 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 da. Yeah. Hey, I don't know about that music choice there.
But it's sort of, in a weird way, it fits the Joker because it's like, he's just like, okay, this is who I am now, mm-hmm. you know? And mm-hmm. the whole movie, he's just uncomfortable in his skin and he doesn't know who he is. And in that moment, he knows who he is.
And he makes that comment about, it's so hard to try and be happy all the time.
Yeah.
And then he makes the other comment where all he has is negative thoughts. So yeah. He just kind of embraces it.
Yeah. And, you know, and there's, you know, with all the controversy surrounding the film, you know, it's, you know, here's a guy that's suffering and needs help, and society kind of, you know, pushes him to the side. And everybody's like, you know, well, this movie's going to inspire people, blah, blah, blah. It's like, shouldn't it inspire us to not push these people aside, to not cut funding for these things like they do in the movie? Like, shouldn't it inspire us to go, okay, you know, let's help this person, you know?
Well, and again, not to get political, but the current debate about gun control, you know, people are talking about limiting the gun laws and making mandatory background checks and things like that, mm-hmm. especially on private sales. But also, you know, this is raising an awareness of, do we properly identify and take active steps to help those who are mentally, you know, ill, that mm-hmm. need help, you know, or do they just get kind of forgotten about?
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. I think going back, I think we talked about this like a half hour ago, but I think that was definitely intentional to definitely get a little topical mm-hmm. in that moment.
Yeah. And I don't know. I go back and forth a little bit because it's like I want, because the movie does end on kind of a hopeless note versus, you know, we know in our minds that Batman's going to come and
I don't think it was hopeless. It ends kind of lighter, which was an interesting choice, but it's because it is such a well-known character. You know where it's going.
You know where it's going. Yeah. And I kind of want to see it go there. I want to see how they do it.
I
wouldn't say no.
Yeah.
I'd go see it opening night.
It's like, I mean, I might complain about it, but, you know, I'll be there. But no, but I agree. I would love, I would be open to a sequel or some sort of continuation. I don't think it's going to be Robert Pattinson's Batman. That's going to be something else, which I am very excited about. You know, I haven't seen any of his movies other than Twilight, which I hate, but I'm willing to give him a shot because I've read, you know, that his performances since the Twilight movies have been stellar.
Yeah, I recently saw him in this movie, High Life. Mm-hmm. He was really good in that.
Yeah, there's.
I feel like every time they cast anybody for a Batman movie, there's outcry. Oh, Ledger, he's a heartthrob. He'll never play a good Joker.
Yeah.
And there you go.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
So
exactly.
People love to complain and they see the finished product. And
it goes back to Keaton, you know.
Yeah.
Like he got flack for it. It's just every time, I don't know, and it just speaks to the passion of the Batman fan base, I guess.
It's true.
Which is a good thing, but it also can be a toxic thing.
Yes.
But I think, you know, I wanted to wait until this movie came out to really have an opinion on it. It's like, sure, I was excited. I wanted to know where it was going. But now I can say I saw it. I enjoyed it. I was very uncomfortable during it, but I recognized that that was the point. You know,
mm-hmm.
the movie wasn't meant to be, you know, this like happy-go-lucky, fun Mark Hamill Joker.
Or that a good triumphs over evil.
Right. And that's, you know... And there's reality to that, and that people get nervous about that. Well, it's a comic book movie. It shouldn't do that. It's like, no, it should tell the story it needs to tell. And I think they succeeded in that.
Sure.
All right, gentlemen, we are going to wrap up here. Any final thoughts on Joker?
Go see it.
Go see it. Yeah, yeah. I loved it. You know, nitpicking on the Thomas Wayne thing, but overall, phenomenal film.
Yeah. And I think it should raise awareness for mental health. And, you know, if you're out there, if you are suffering, you know, please get help. You know, there's always options for you. We don't, you know, like Batman says in Killing Joke, you don't need to be alone. You know, you don't need to be on the edge.
It was cool what you said too. I don't know how much time we have left, so sorry to jump in.
But
what you said earlier, Jesse, about De Niro's line to him, like not everybody is reacting the way you are. I don't remember exactly what it was.
Something like that.
I honestly forgot about that line. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there is at the end, even though you feel bad for the character throughout the film, that last sequence kind of really vilifies him in some way.
Yeah.
And reminds us that, yeah, like you were just saying, JJ, you know, yeah, the world can beat you down sometimes, but you don't have to give up like he did.
Right. Yeah.
Get the help you need.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, gentlemen, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. This was fun.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to have to do this again.
For sure.
Another topic. So
any topic.
Any topic. We'll talk about Two-Face next time.
Ooh.
All right. All right, gentlemen. Thank you very much. Comic Junkies signing off.